there, beautiful people. Welcome back to Fans High. Another week for complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am entertainment journalist and editor Travell Anderson.
I am writer, producer, and journalist Jared Hill. Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about the ballroom scene and its mainstreaming, the ways that we've gotten to see things with like Pose and Legendary and various other spaces that are getting celebrated more and more. There's a lot of great and a lot of annoying about that. We'll get into it with the perfect guest. I would say maybe a historian of the ballroom culture. But first, it is finally the most wonderful time of the year. It is time for the Max Fun Drive. This is the time of year we devote inviting you to become a member of the Maximum Fun Network or to boost or upgrade your membership and support this show with your monthly contribution. It's how we maintain our independence and keep the show going for you every single week to enjoy. And it's also a great time to join and get perks, which we'll talk a little bit more about a little bit later. So it's easy to join. You can look at all the levels and select your favorite shows. All of that is available for you on MaximumFun.org/join, where you can get more information about how you can be a part of the Max Fun Drive. Okay. We are starting a new segment that is appropriately
I'm
for this episode.
I started the new segment. I got it. You struggling. I got you. I'm going to jump right on in and do this for you. It's perfect. It's wonderful. This is friendship, okay? This is support.
Wow.
This is what support looks like.
Wow.
Hashtag this is what support looks like. So we're starting a new segment called, the loose name for it is Reading is Fundamental, all right? We've talked a number of times about the books we're reading, and so we thought it'd be great to dedicate some time every few episodes to making some reading recommendations for those out there for whom that form of cultural consumption is preferred, okay? So in the spirit of the show, we're going to give you two recommendations. A book that we like that you definitely should check out, and maybe one that you might not want to check out. But that's up to you, because you are your own individual, and you retain the power of your choice, okay? So, Jared, what's a book that you are recommending this week?
My first book that I recommend is probably my favorite book of all time. It's called The Four Agreements. It's by Don Miguel Ruiz. It is a book about four agreements that you make with yourself about ways that you will and will not navigate the world. And it's something that I've read probably 12 years ago, but I reference it all the time because it was such an impactful book for me. And I think that it really speaks for everybody, like speaks to everyone that reads it and connects with it. So that is my book recommendation.
Okay, my recommendations for this week. I've told y'all that, you know, I'm a memoirs type of girl. And so I'm going to highlight two books that I've mentioned before on this show. The first is Just As I Am by Cicely Tyson. I spoke about that a few weeks ago, right before she died. And then the second book is going to be The Mother of Black Hollywood by Jennifer Lewis. Okay. It's excellent. It's
Baby.
Amazing. Jared's already told y'all to listen to the audiobook version of it if you want to hear the wonderful Jennifer Lewis read out her own words. But even if you don't listen to her do it and you just read it, it's literally written in her voice. So you should definitely check that out.
It is a key cackle.
Now, a book that you had some anti-feelings toward, Jarrett.
So, I was recommended this book by a lot of different people, and Char Jocelle, a friend to the show, was telling me about it as well, and I think we agree a lot on this. I enjoy this book, but I'm challenged by the reporting in it. It's called Ladies Who Punch, The Explosive Inside Story of The View. Now, here's the thing. It is really interesting if you are a fan of The View. Like I was, again, I've been gay my whole life, so I was watching it as a kid. And I remember all of like the old years or whatever. And so this gives a lot of really cool, interesting context to those years. But then there's just some reporting in it that I'm like, this is blatantly wrong. And so it makes me question all of the things that I can't verify. But there are interviews with folks from the cast of the show over the years, a lot of the people who've been on the show and worked on the show. So if you're interested in The View, Ladies Who Punch, The Explosive Inside Story of The View is interesting, but I got some questions.
Interesting. Just tell people not to read it if you question the reporting.
I mean, it was juicy.
He said the reporting is shoddy, honey.
It was a juicy book, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that, and that was interesting,
lack
but I also don't know if I believe
honey.
It. So, yeah.
Okay, my book is going to be... So I struggled to come up with a book that I didn't like because I typically only read books that I think I'm going to like. And it's typically only for like potential coverage purposes. And so I ended up reading this book, you know, for coverage purposes, and I did not enjoy it. The name of the book is Karamo, My Story of Embracing Purpose, Healing, and Hope.
Goddamn.
And that is a memoir written by Karamo Brown, your fave, your friend from Queer Eye and Real World, his Real World days. And I ended up writing a review on the book when I was out at Out Magazine. And I'll just read the headline and then we can move on. The headline was, Karamo Brown's new memoir is written for the white gays. So you can take that how you will.
Question, when you say gays, G-A-Z-E or G-A-Y-S?
Both, goddamn it. Why not?
Yes.
One in the same. Karamo, if you both. Oh, you mean in the headline specifically, it was G-A-Z-E.
Oh,
but okay. The white gaze, G-A-Y-S, is the white gaze, G-A-Z-E.
Yes. Indeed.
Period. And so if you're a fan of Karamo's, you might like it. If you already have, you know, reservations about Karamo as a personality, then maybe you won't.
Wow.
But if you're going to get any of these books, you know, make sure you grab it from a black bookstore in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen. Really?
The way.
All right, we're going to take our first break.
Wait, hold on. The way you've been saying in the name of Jesus the last 2 weeks, it takes me out every time.
We're going to take a break while Jared bring himself back together, okay? And when we come back, we're going to get into our fan tie. Y'all be blessed.
In the name of Jesus.
Hey, y'all. So you heard Jared at the beginning of the show tell you that we are in the midst of the Max Fun Drive.
In the name of Jesus.
What's the Max Fun Drive, you ask? Well, this is our time, the one time a year where we make, you know, a fervent appeal to you all, our wonderful listeners and supporters, to continue to support, you know, but this time with your coins, okay?
Praise the Lord.
In case you didn't know, Max Fun as a network is a listener-supported network. Very, you know, public radio tease, very Patreon tease if you're supporting people over there. We do it by having people become members of the Max Fun Drive. This year's theme is all about community. We all know what last year did to us, okay?
Baby.
We launched this show mere months before shit hit the fan and have been recording it from our homes, okay? Consistently, every single week. We don't even take the bye weeks off that we have contractually, you know, given to us.
In the name of Jesus.
So much. Because we care about y'all so much, okay? And so we are just asking if you have it, okay, to become a member of the Fanti fam, of the Maximum Fun family.
That's right. So basically what we're asking for is for you to go to MaximumFun.org/join for ways that you can support the show. If you're already a supporter of the show, we ask that you consider upgrading your membership. And we've got some really cool things that come with that. We've got bonus content. We just recently did a special episode with Morgan Rhodes from Heat Rocks. And we talked about Beyonce. Now, I'm going to tell you, Morgan was smarter than us in her decision making on that episode. But hey, it's behind a paywall, so most people won't have access to it. But you do. We also have gifts. We have a brand new pin that comes out pretty soon where it's something that is designed by Travell and I. Do you want to tell them what it says or do we want to wait?
Listen, if you go to MaximumFun.org/join, they have a preview of all of these different, you know, gifts and perks, including the enamel pin. We did one last year that some people who joined and supported the show were able to get. And so if you join this year, you'll be able to get that as well. We just gonna tease it. It's cute. You're gonna want to, you know, put it on your shirt, your lapel, mm-hmm, you know, and mm-hmm, all of your backpack. If you have a backpack, can attach it to your tail if you want to. It's yours.
On the lowest of keys, it's actually drip 2 of merch for us. It's like it's drip 1.5 of merch for
us. Maybe like 1.15.
Okay, I'll take that. That's fine. Either way you look at it, we're really, really grateful for your support of the show over the course of the last year and some change through all of the things that have been going on in the world with us personally and with all of you out there and us as a country. We really appreciate that you've carved out a little bit of time for our show every week to give us a listen, to, you know, kick us a dollar or two, to buy the merch or to tell a friend about it. All of those things really, really help the show and help us to be able to create it. So thank you.
And we should just say, really quickly before we finish this little pitch break, okay, that we are planning some various, you know, events for members, for, you know, Max Fun members and Fanti Fam members. And so if you might be interested potentially in, like, you know, maybe a live show or something, then, like, you being a member of the Maximum Fun family, you'll be the first to know, you know, when that all is coming down the
pipeline. Booyah. So yes.
Go on and do that.
All right.
Thank you so much. Again, MaximumFun.org/join.
In the name of Jesus.
Alrighty, welcome back, beautiful people. There's been a lot of conversations over the last few years about the ball scene, ball culture going mainstream, from the RuPaul's Drag Race queens butchering terminology from the scene to the noted documentaries and series, including 2016's Kiki, as well as 2018's My House. This week, two other titles centering the ball community, that's Pose's final season, as well as the second season of HBO Max's legendary premiere, making it the perfect opportunity to talk about the benefits and the pitfalls of this community's on again and off again relationship with outside eyeballs, gawking, spectating, and in some cases thieving. Joining us back for his second Fanti appearance is writer and ballroom historian and host of the new companion podcast for HBO Max's legendary called The Let Out, my good Judy Michael Street. How are you doing today?
I am good. I will say at the top, I do not consider myself a historian.
Girl, goodbye.
But
you
thank
here
you
now.
So much for having me back.
I just want to say I'm out of breath after you read all that. That was all. I felt like you did that all in one breath. That was work. And I applaud you.
At this pause.
Okay, great. So... Okay, to get us started, Michael, I'd love to know about, like, your ballroom story, just like how you got into knowing as much as you know about the scene. How'd you first come to learn about ballroom?
How'd you become a ballroom historian?
Period.
Well, that story doesn't exist because I'm not. But the way that I came to know so much about the scene was, I think that it's, like, kind of common. I was, you know, a kid on YouTube back in the day. So YouTube starts in 2005 or 2006, I can't remember. And I was on it, like, early days, extremely early days. And I was really obsessed with, like, the dance community. And so, you know, some of my favorite people were, like, Jonte Moaning and Luam and Andre and Miguel Antonio Jr. And so these were all, you know, people who would go teach or take a class and post their videos of them in class. And I'm actually going somewhere with this. So Jonte was one of these people, and he would incorporate dances, voguing into some of his choreography a little bit. And then sort of I started learning about Daniel Polanco and all these other people. And so this eventually, you know, I found a clip, you know, a voguing clip. And I was completely obsessed. You know, as we do as kids, start going down this, you know, this rabbit hole every day on YouTube, looking up these pages. My favorite at the time was JI922, who I've come to know was this man named Jayan in the House of Chanel at the time. And he would post all these clips. And so I'm watching all these clips, and then, you know, America's Best Dance Crew happens. And so I'm watching Laomi and Deshaun and Malachi and Prince. And I think it was Tony? All on America's Best Dance Crew.
May Lil Mama's career rest.
She was actually extremely transphobic on that show, but I was watching all of that and, like, loving it, and then sort of going from there and going back and looking for their clips. And so, you know, at the time, I was always a huge fan of Cassandra Ebony. May she rest in peace. And so that sort of began my obsession. And during that time, I was not only watching the clips, but then I would read all the comments to see, like, oh, was this a good clip? Did they do well? Like, you know, like, is this bad? Is this not how you're supposed to do it? And, you know, what's this word that they're saying? Or, like, what does that mean? And I was in the comments, like, asking people questions. And just over time, I, like, continued to do that over the years. And, you know, I moved to New York City and was able to go to balls and meet people. And I met people like Twiggy Poochie Garçon and, you know, Jack Mizrahi Gucci and everyone else that I met here. And started having conversations with them and asking them about the scene and doing more and more research. I met Hector Extravaganza, and developed a relationship with him and all these people and just sort of trying to soak up everything that I could. And I very quickly learned that it was all an oral history. There was very little that I could go and search and find. And so because I was a writer, I knew immediately that I was like, I want to learn these things because I want to write them down. So when the next me comes along, they have something that they can go back to and read and reference. And also because this community is dying. And so we just had the passing of, someone this weekend that I just wrote about, and, you know, Vaughn Allure passed, you know, like a month ago, and Cassandra passed, and Hector and Yolanda, and there's a lot of people who passed over the past 2 years and within ballroom, and particularly that are like major names. And so, it became increasingly important to me to write these stories down so that they would be remembered.
That sounds like a historian to me, but I'm about my business.
Well, that's the answer to your question.
Jared, do you have a relationship to ballroom that I don't know?
No.
You don't be. I didn't see you walk.
Wouldn't that be like the worst answer? Yeah, I got nothing. So
you
back
can walk
to you.
Schoolboy realness once in a while.
No, I mean, depending on what the hair is giving. My introduction to the ballroom culture was probably in college as well. I think also around 2006. I think Michael, you were saying 2006, 2007 when YouTube was starting. But when I moved to go to college in Atlanta, you know, going to an HBCU, the black gays that I befriended kind of like brought me into black gay culture. So my coming of age was like very immersed in black gay culture, and this was a big part of it. And like we had a boarding house that was myself and three roommates, and it was just the queerest, gayest, blackest house or whatever. And so we'd have parties at our house, or you know, we'd, you know, do all kinds of different things. And at some point, like, I saw Paris Was Burning then, and I was just like, what is happening? And how are these people saying all these things that we say all the time? And so it was just kind of like mind blowing to me. I was like, we say all those things. And they're like, yes, daughter, it came from here, you know, like, and so that was kind of my introduction to ballroom culture. And then I would say that I haven't had like a whole bunch of connection to balls, but you reminded me that, you know, we, myself and you were on the jury for Outfest back, I don't know how many years ago now. Jamal Simmons' film, his film, When the Beat Drops, it's not really ball culture, but it's like adjacent, it's bucking and that whole thing. Is that the same, would you say?
No, I mean, so...
They're not the same.
No, it's not. But there is a history and, like, a culture of, like, making chosen families and in some way sort of competing, right? And so you have, like, the rainbow houses, you have drag houses, you have bucking, you had some people who do, like, the same sort of thing, but with stepping groups. And so, you know what I mean? Like, there is a history within specifically queer culture of and specifically black queer culture of making these groups. But in that way, like, there's a similarity, but they're different. And there's also, like, you know, a culture which I want to look more into that is very similar to ballroom, but that is just one way. It's just, walking.
So, yeah, that's kind of been my introduction and, like, you know, history, I guess, if you will. And then, obviously, Pose has been probably the most concentrated, long-term kind of immersion into the culture that I've had, so... What about you?
I didn't see Paris is Burning until college as well. But I was thinking while y'all were talking, and I think actually the first kind of semblance of voguing in particular that I saw was, if I'm not mistaken, there's an episode of Noah's Ark at a ball.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, wait. If they did drag in an episode, is that a, did they have a ball episode as well?
I don't remember if it was a different episode or did they do drag at the ball? Because I feel like they went to the Ovenus Ball, which is a big ball in LA, or used to be a big ball in LA.
Right.
When Rodney was LaShant Devereaux. That always took me out. I always love that name.
But we could talk also forever about like Patrick's work and like how formative that was. But yeah, it's just like, I think that there was some, and also just knowing Patrick, I know that like there was something in there, mm-hmm. Either in that or in the skinnier, you know, in one of those products.
Right. And I was going to say that I think that is probably the first time that I saw any kind of reference to this particular scene. And then, you know, when I was sneaking into the gay clubs in South Carolina, in Charleston to be specific, I remember just like hearing things about like this, you know, culture of people and their families, you know, that they have chosen, and stuff like that. And then I'm sure we're going to get into Drag Race and Pose and obviously Legendary and all of that, but that would be my beginning as well. Okay, so let's get into the fan of it, what we love about, you know, what appears to be increased visibility, increased representation of the community. Would you like to get us started, Michael, about what you love about all of this, this moment we're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I say this a lot, like, mine is not very sexy. My biggest thing that I love about all of this is it is giving members of this community, and really, I think, for the first time in the trajectory of, like, this community mainstreaming, it is giving, actually that's not true, but it's really what I think is the most impactful iteration. It's giving people from this community, it's putting them in positions of power and setting them up to be in bigger positions of power later. In ways that I don't think was happening before, right? And so with Legendary, Pose, and other projects that are going on right now, you're seeing people like Jack Mizrahi Gucci get in the writer's room of Pose and become a co-executive producer of Legendary. You're seeing people like Twiggy get, you know, choreography, consulting credits. You're seeing Wyomi do the same. You're seeing Deshaun be, you know, an MC and host, and people are seeing how talented he is at doing those things. And sometimes this is people learning new things, like Jack really worked really hard to learn how to write, you know, scripted television, and he's getting interested in that. But in some ways, it's not learning new things. It's just, you know, putting the experience that you've had in ballroom underground and taking that and putting it in a way that's going to be more easily digestible to the mainstream for resume. And so, you know, yes, Deshaun is hosting his quote unquote his first show, right, doing this, but like he's been hosting for years. Because he's been hosting balls, right? And so it's in ways there's similar skills, right? But he might not have been able to go into something and say, I can host this because I've been doing this for years if it was just balls. But now that he can say that he did it for Legendary, it's a different conversation.
Right.
And so that is what has really, I have been the most interested in. It is seeing people get power and positions on the back end that will allow them to take this. And also after the mainstream is, you know, the people in the mainstream, like the Ryan Murphys and the Stephen Canals and all those people are sort of moved on from ballroom as, you know, their flavor of the month. These people have accumulated enough power that they can then okay and green light their own projects and not need to appeal necessarily to someone else. So that is one of the things I'm really excited about.
I would say that my primary fan situation for this is really kind of grown out of that, and that I'm really excited to see like queer diversity continuing to grow, right? And especially like queer Black and brown diversity, where we're able to see more different kinds of Black queer folks that show up in different ways, that have different interests, that, you know, move about the world in a different kind of way. And like for them to, for all of the different ways that we show up to be represented, and then to have a platform for the work that we do, right? And the ways that we contribute artistically, creatively, you know, and the many different ways. So that's really the only thing that I'm loving about it, because most of the stuff about it, I'm not loving.
I mean, I also love...
Which we'll get into.
You know, I mean, I also love just, like, simply, like, the girls is fucking talented, bitch.
Period.
Mm-hmm. The girls, like... I don't know. You guys sort of talked about your experience a little bit, but I don't know if you've ever been to a major ball. And I know all the girls go up for like performance and voguing and, you know, Honey and Pussy West and, you know, all the girls. Everybody, it's very easy to get into that. But if you have never been to a major ball and see the girls sell it for like Fem Queen Face, baby, it is an experience that like you can't get in any other way. And so, like, seeing people get in that way, like, I live for it. Like, that is one thing that, you know, and I think it's, like, very low-hanging fruit, but, like, just seeing the girls get what they should be getting, right? Going to the Miyake Mugler Ball 2 years ago, where Rihanna sponsored the Open to All Face category and gave out $10,000, and seeing the girls bring it, like, baby, like, that is... I will always live for that. And like, you know, the girl who should have won didn't win, but the girls getting the coin for bringing or like getting the attention right. Like Michelle didn't win, but bitch, the girl saw that performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think what's great about what you're talking about is the ways that we have been creative and innovative and performance artists and all kinds of different things in ways that haven't been appreciated, right? Mm-hmm. Or haven't been giving like time, energy, or just respect. And I think that the more we get to see these different kinds of creativity and performance and art and all that, I think it makes us all better. But like, I think it also continues to give these folks more space. And as Michael talked about, them being in positions of power means that they're likely going to bring in more people, right? Because we know how this works. When we get asked to go into a space, we get asked to bring in the people to diversify the space. So
I think that they're... So I have a response to that, but I'm going to save it for the anti section. But I did want to say...
Well, I mean, because most of mine is anti, well, so I got
but
you.
I wanted to say that I also feel like a lot of these folks, like, have perfect personalities already made for TV, like, already made for reality TV in particular. I'm thinking of My House, which was such a fucking amazing show to me, at least. And the ways in which we saw various folks' personalities through that. I'm thinking of Legendary in terms of, like, the ways in which, you know, they be giving us a good show, honey. I don't know if that's their real attitudes or whatever, but baby, as a viewer, I'm in.
Can I just tell you? So I've only watched, like, a couple of episodes of Legendary, but I remember watching in the very first episode, their house backstories were so fascinating to me. I was like, how do all of these people not have a reality show where we're following their lives day to day, week to week? Like, they are
because
so
they
perfectly
black and brown
made for reality TV.
And they had a show, but then Vice said no more.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, where you at?
Okay.
So, well, it's interesting also because black and brown people, specifically black and brown queer people, like, just because we didn't have the thing in mainstream doesn't mean we wasn't doing it.
Period.
Come on. So, there is like a history of us, like, we got these YouTube reality TV shows, we got the, like, and there are girls that the ballroom has had that as well, where you have, you know, this whole cottage media industry of ballroom, of like, when Blog Talk Radio was a thing, there were all these like radio shows that people would go on and host these shows and like, talk about the drama, and like, you know, you have a Kelly Mizrahi who like sees herself as like, you know, in ways the TMZ of ballroom, and you have someone like Caesar who has Ballroom Throwbacks, which is what everybody kind of knows is sort of an archive of sorts of the scene. But you know, in addition to having footage of the actual the balls, he used to do these segments called The Aftermath, and you know, I can't remember what the name of the other one was, but he would, oh, In the Mix, where he would just go around and, like, turn the camera on and interview the girls, and the girls, like, we've seen, you've all seen those clips, you've all seen, you know, Selvin in those clips, and Kelly Mizrahi, and, like, Cardi B and Nicki Minaj post those clips all the time. Right. And they're from, like, they're from ballroom, and it's that those people, either some of them is their pure personality, and some of them are putting on for the camera, but they have a history of knowing how to turn it on and be a character for the camera.
Even as I hear you saying the girls, the girls, the girls, we always on this show are like, want to be clear, girls is gender neutral, and it's spelled with a Y, maybe.
Oh, yes.
But I think, does that come from ballroom?
I mean, I wouldn't say it comes from ballroom, but it is extremely common.
Yeah, that's true.
It's extremely common there. We call, yeah, everybody... Everybody is the girls except for the boys.
Period.
And to be clear, some of the boys are included in the girls. Let's be really clear.
Yeah.
Y'all are
that's so funny.
Okay, let's get into the anti of it all. I think for me, and I'll pick off of the thing I told you, Jared, I wanted to respond to. You know, I'm very skeptical still of this, you know, what seems to be this moment of, like, increased visibility for the girls. Because, you know, I think of a show like Pose, and I'm like, even... And thinking both of the primary folks in that show, as well as the members from the community who fill the background and who inform or consulted on things. And I'm interested to know, like, what is next, you know, like, if opportunity is coming from what we believe Pose to be doing. And I think, you know, I think Legendary is probably a great example in terms of, right, Deshaun Central on there, Laomi Central on there. You mentioned Jack is a producer on that as well. And so that's great. But I'm just super skeptical. I don't know if that's, like, legitimate or not, but we know the ways in which the community has been, you know, focused on or given some sort of attention. I'm thinking of Paris is Burning. I'm thinking of Madonna. But then, you know, there's a documentary. What's the name of the documentary about the Vogue dancers that toured with Madonna? I forget the name of it. They talk in the documentary about how it was great while it was great, and then, you know, shit hit the fan when, you know, people were no longer interested.
Well, I think that's a really fair skepticism, because realistically, all of this kind of stuff goes in cycles, right? Like, we always talk about how UPN and the WB was, like, the heyday of black television, and there was so much black representation on television, you know, kind of following the era of, like, Cosby bringing in and whatever, however you look at that. But, I mean... Then it also took a massive dip when, you know, the WB and UPN became CW, and they relegated all that black programming to one night and then got rid of it, right? And so, I mean, I think that we see that come in waves. We just saw, we see, like, the women's movement rising again right now. But, like, we also saw that after Anita Hill in the 90s when we were looking at Clarence Thomas, and, like, we saw that wave of women being elected, and then we kind of see it dip back down, and then we saw another wave of women being elected most recently. I think all of these things kind of go in waves and cycles, and I think we have to kind of figure out how to be innovative and to be able to kind of sustain those waves, because realistically, you know, everything kind of moves that way.
So there's two things I feel like I should say here. So one is that, like, yeah, it's very much waves. And these things are trends. And this is why I say that I'm interested in seeing people gaining positions of power and having the ability to approve things on their own, because then you're not waiting for the next wave.
Right.
So in that way, that in some ways helps to counterbalance the wave. Mm-hmm. And so even when this person doesn't care anymore and that person doesn't care anymore, if you have accumulated enough power and resources that you can now say, we're going to go out and do this on our own, that is a different thing, right?
I would also offer that I don't know that this moment is different, but some of the indicators do feel different than maybe back when we're thinking about UPN WB days. But, like, you know, a lot more people are getting like massive production deals and overalls, right? To be able to start creating more and more content because there are more channels, there are more outlets and places like that, which seems like...
Not the ball girls.
Okay. I'm not just talking about the ball girls, but I'm talking about diversity in general and like the ways that we're seeing more queer representation and trans representation. I think that it stands for the opportunity for those things to open up. I can't guarantee that they will, obviously, but it seems like there's a better possibility now than there might have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, so the thing that Jared is, and I want to get to this other point, but the thing that Jared is saying is true, right? Is that like, essentially, before, there were only so many channels. There was only so much space, so many things that could be on at once. And now, when you, because we have such a proliferation of streaming networks and all this other stuff, there's just so much more content to be on. So people, networks and companies can invest in things that are niche because of the fact that they're not having to choose this or that. You can just do both.
I think that something that people don't tend to think about when it comes to like what cable is, right? Like most every cable channel is niche. It's serving like a very specific audience, right? TBS, comedy, TNT, we give you like dramas in the evening. Logo was about being gay. MTV, who knows what they're about right now? But like BET is about black content. OWN is about black women, right? Like, and so I think that the fact that we have all of these other platforms now, it gives us more opportunities to see different places where this audience might be really served. Logo, you know, was, people have always debated about whether or not Logo did a good job, and more people than not say they didn't. But like Bravo and E tend to super serve the gay community in ways where they did. In ways that, you know, Logo did not and could not. And so I would like to believe that as we continue to grow and bring in more people with deals and have more and more platforms, like we will have more platforms to be able to continue these stories and being able to tell them. I don't know that that's true, that that will happen, but I think that the ground is a lot more fertile this time for that to be something that can sustain.
So there is this thing of, I think Travell sort of mentioned like, when you bring in the girls, you expect for them to bring in... Oh, no, Jared said this. When you bring in the girls, they expect for you to bring in the girls. And that very much happened with Pose in that, like, they brought in a few of the girls who brought in all the girls, right? Like, the fact that, like, that ballroom was all through that room and through all the balls and, like, were the background people and, like, just random shots, you know, all of that had to do with the fact that they brought in, you know, three key members of the scene who said to them, this is what you could do. You could bring in the people to that are from the scene to have them fill in. And I bring that up specifically in the anti section because those people go unthanked. And so I went to the premiere that everyone was talking about where... you know, they premiered the first two episodes of Pose, and there was a speech that went left. And while I don't want to talk about that speech, I want to talk about a speech that came right before it. And so Stephen Canals got up. You know, we know him as the co-creator of Pose. It was his original idea, which he got after watching Paris is Burning. And he was talking about sort of his four pillars of strength through that series, through Pose. So he mentioned Sherry March, who after 166 meetings, you know, said we need to make this project, and she was the one who connected him with Ryan. He mentions Ryan because Ryan Murphy taught him how to build his own table, right, and how to work in this industry and all those sorts of things. He talked about Brad,
Valchuk,
you know, yeah, who's a writer, and you know about sort of how influential Brad was in his writing process. And you know, Brad actually wrote that scene from season one, where Blanca walks into the dance school and it's like, you know, this is my kid and da da da. Yeah. And so they all say that that's one of the best scenes of the entire series. And then he mentions Janet Mock. And while all those people are for sure deserving of their flowers for their contributions to that project, I thought it was very interesting that he at no time acknowledged specifically the input and the ways in which he relied on the ballroom community to make this project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, the ballroom community not only was the, you know, the venue for this project, not only was like all of the backstory, but also, and not only populated the scenes in the background, but, you know, Dominique is ballroom, right? Like, you're thinking about season three, Jason, who's Lamar on the show, ballroom, like, and they play such key roles, mm-hmm. In the show around, you know, social content outside and all that. You're thinking about Hector Extravaganza and how he meant so much to the show that after Hector died, they put, you know, they dedicated an episode to him. So it was very interesting to me to see you get into this room knowing that, yes, you did much of this work was on the backs of Black and brown trans women who were the leads of your show. But also that all of the backstory and really everything that people know this show for was this ballroom community, and there was nobody from this ballroom community that you thanked, knowing that those are the people who were correcting you on the nuances and informing the project in various ways. Mm-hmm. And so that for me is one of the antis, is people, particularly young people, or people who are, you know, sort of early on in their career, who are using this community, not necessarily maliciously, but through their work, they're utilizing this community to make this point, and then not recognizing the people who allowed them and assisted them, and making sure that it was accurate.
Right. The folks whose story it is, ultimately, right? Because, like, you know, one of the things I do love about Pose in particular is that, you know, I loved how they kind of incorporated various, like, actual historical moments from the scene, mm-hmm. into particularly season two. I believe that was season two. But also, like, you know, every time y'all open y'all motherfucking mouths to talk about this show, I agree that they should be explicitly lifting up, you know, the folks who helped them go about that. I wanted to just note, you know, the ways in which kind of this mainstreaming, if you will, of the ball scene had, like, you know, white people just out here saying, you know, various things that the scene has said because they got it from RuPaul's Drag Race, or they watched Pose, or they watched Legendary's first season. And I don't know, you know, we got a lot of white people who watch this show or listen to this show, this one we own right now. And, you know, it just always feels weird hearing certain terminology come out of certain folks' mouth. I'll leave it there. Go ahead, Jen.
Well, I mean, I only have two quick antis because I know we're about at time here, but really rooted in that is my second one. I would say I'm tired of the ways that mainstream culture is always kind of using the language as if it's like cute, and they're like, we've been invited to places where people have like tried to use the terminology and like completely fucked it up and been like, wait, what? Or if I always say this, but like, if I read another article about this show and the journalist or writer says, you know, the category is, I'm going to lose my fucking mind, right? Like, it drives me crazy. And then the other piece of it is, we talked about this about when we did the mainstreaming of Blackness episode, but like, I never forget hearing a friend of mine talk about the Abbey, and I talked about this, like I said in the previous episode, where like straight people have like infiltrated it so much that like you never really know how safe it is to like flirt with someone or to assume that a person is gay and so forth. And so like these spaces have been so safe for the people in them, and like the place to escape, the place to go and live, the place to go and express oneself. But like the more that we like open it up to everyone else, like there's something great about people knowing about it and appreciating it and respecting it. But then there's something really scary about those people coming in and the people who created that space not feeling as safe because they are, you know, in mixed company now. And so that is something mm-hmm. that I'm always thinking about as well.
Yeah, I've said this to Travelle before. One, I will say the Abbey is a little different.
I mean, she's her own situation, but like that was the example someone gave.
Yeah, it's like the owner and stuff, they are very much about, that's their energy. They don't care. They want the coin. And that's fine for them. But I am very much on that same page. I think that like there's something to be said for what happens when the safe space becomes the mainstream. And so this place that you went to retreat to sort of either build yourself up or mm-hmm. or to let all your guard down. What happens when, you know, it's the idea of like, what happens when like your bedroom becomes your living room, right? And it's like there's a different exchange, there's a different way that you can behave when it's your space and you're the only one in that space, and the people that are in that space are people that you know that you have an understanding with, right? It's like when you're inviting people over, you know, you're inviting company over, right? You tidy up, you change, you might, you know, move a little differently in the house because people are now coming into your home as opposed to when they're not there. And so what happens when, you know, you've been sort of relaxed and let your guard down because this is ballroom, because these are your people, and now you do have to, because that is kind of the commodification of ballroom comes mostly through ballroom as a sport. And so like thinking about like the categories and like what's happening on the floor. And those people are not in any way sort of understanding the nuances and complexities and everything else that goes within this community. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, there are some members of this community who absolutely maybe come and what they're here for is, oh, I'm an amazing performer. I'm trying to perform and you know, win all the categories and make all the money that I can. But for some people, and I would venture to say for most people, ballroom still serves the purposes that it did in its infancy, in that it is still a place for communion for queer people. It is still a place for people to explore their genders. It is still a place for people to learn things about themselves and their communities. And for people to find refuge. And so, when you forget all of that, or you think that like, you know, oh, it's going to be cool. Like, I am continuously worried about that. But at the same token, I know that like, you know, there's scenes like the Kiki scene that were made, which is a sub scene within ballroom that actually end up serving those purposes. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes as a result of the mainstreaming.
Michael, before we go, tell people about your new podcast and how they can find it.
Yeah, so I have a new podcast called The Let Out. And so essentially every week, basically, I interview the departing house on from Legendary. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. I love chatting with these people, and I am interested in seeing like what they think about what La Roche said. Or what Jamila, or, you know, one of the other girls had to say about their performance. And, you know, I'm also interested in hearing about specifically their legacies before the show. And so, you know, what were you doing? What were you known for? Because I think that, like, when people get on television, we see this with other shows, right? Is that, like, people only think about you in context for what you did on that show. What you did on television. And there was so much more, right? People, houses come in, there's five legends in the house, which means those girls is walking. You can get it anywhere you listen to podcasts. It should be posted the day after every episode. You can listen to it on HBO Max or Apple Podcasts or wherever shows.
Wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. Yeah. You could just go ahead and over swipe over it left or right to that option that says search and type in The Let Out. And it'll be right there.
All right.
Me, I'm at Instagram. It's probably the best place, and it's Michael Street.
All right. Thank you so much for being here, Michael. Really appreciate your perspective on this and agreeing with me and disagreeing with Travelle. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much in listener feedback and our dishonorable mentions. As we go to break, let us know what you think about this conversation about the ballroom scene and whatnot. Tweet or post using the hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in and responding to your posts on our Twitter and Instagram from @FantiPodcast. Want to know what you are thinking. We'll be right back. More Fanti after this.
Hi, this is Tom from Turner's Falls, Massachusetts. Max Fun has been pretty important to me the last, since 2010. So, 11 years. It's seen me through Donald Trump being elected, me being dumped, seeing me through being drunk and feeling dark and getting sober and feeling good and lots of different shows, The Flop House, My Brother and Me, Jordan Jesse Go, Stop Podcasting Yourself, but a lot of others I don't want to go on so far that I have to get completely edited down. But it has meant a lot to me, and that's why I pay for it, because y'all are great, and I love everyone. Bye.
Welcome back. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment. We've had an email here from Fletcher, and it was a beautiful email. I'm going to read the whole thing. It's rather short. Well, it could have been longer, but it wasn't. So thank you, Fletcher. Fletcher says, "We all knew a gender episode would eventually come, but I'm grateful that it came during such an impactful time in my gender journey. I have been openly trans/genderqueer to myself for nearly a decade now. But even so, there's a lot for me to reflect on and work through at 21 years old. I consider myself a very flamboyant gay man, and I try to joke about my AFAB, that's assigned female at birth, lifestyle, making me gay as a way to cope. Like, my parents handed me that Barbie, and of course I kiss men. But internally, that expectation society has of me to be a feminine woman often hinders me from expressing myself how I want as a feminine man. It is a very complex line between euphoria and dysphoria, where intent and meaning often mean way more than the gendered language. She, quote-unquote, from another gay man can be as gender-confirming as hearing he, but from a cis man, it is devastating. Despite how long I've been trans, I often struggle with this confusing distinction, but this episode took me right out of Sisney World, which I love, you know, like Disney World, but Sisney World,
yeah.
And I thank you. While it is still not always safe to publicly argue about gender roles, especially where I am in, I don't know why that's like that, so I'm going to just blurt that out.
Beep. Yeah.
There's... It will always be important to express ourselves how we feel. I've been extremely unsure about getting HRT, that's hormone replacement therapy, I believe, mm-hmm. and even canceled it originally, too worried about how my journey would be viewed. This episode helped confirm and comforted me in my transition going at my pace, my rules. On May 4th, which is the day that this episode comes out, I will legally be Fletcher Clark, and as a longtime enjoyer, wanted to share that with you. Thank you for reading this long-ass ramble, girlies, gender neutral. So I wanted to read that because I wanted to celebrate Fletcher. Shout out to you on your trans birthday. Shout out to you. And we got a lot of emails and a lot of tweets and messages about the episode, and it was a little longer than normal, but you all seem to really enjoy it. And so I'm grateful for that. And so much of the feedback that we've gotten from you all about it.
Yeah. When we did it, afterward, when we spoke about it, I was like, I think this is an episode that's going to matter to people. So I'm really grateful that you pitched the idea to do that. I'm not giving you a compliment because you don't know how to receive those, but
you already did. It's okay.
No. Let's not get it twisted.
I already took it.
And
it's
happy,
fine.
Happy birthday, Fletcher. That's a really, really exciting moment.
Okay, let's get into our dishonorable mentions, our opportunity to call out the stories that caught our attention this week and deserve a little something. All right, Jared, what do you have?
All right, my first honorable mention is going to go to Madison Callie. She is this Black woman on Instagram who I like stumbled upon. I don't remember how I got to her page, but she plays like contemporary R&B and classic soul and whatever she wants, I guess, on a harp, and it is gorgeous, and the music is beautiful, she's beautiful, the videos are beautiful, like it's just really, really dope. So I've put a link into one of my favorite posts, and I'll let you take a listen right now. Okay, you guys can check out the link to that inside the episode notes. So that's my very first one. What's yours?
Well, I just want to shout out also, you know, another great harpist that I happen to know, Aya Simone, fabulous Black trans artist. Check her out as well. I'm giving a quick mention to Kevin Merida, who has been announced as the new editor, new top editor over at the LA Times, second Black person in that particular role, third person of color. And so shout out to him. He used to be over at, or he's cycling out of his role as EIC of ESPN's The Undefeated.
My second honorable mention is going to go to Stephanie Ruhle. She's an anchor over at MSNBC. And I'm going to play this clip for you that is of her questioning West Virginia Governor Jim Justice on a trans athletes bill that they just recently passed. She had asked him already one time, can you give me a single example of this being an actual problem in your state? And he wasn't really able to answer that. And this is how she followed.
Can you give me one example of a transgender child trying to get an unfair advantage, just one in your state? You signed a bill about it.
No, I can't really tell you one, but I can tell you this, Stephanie. I'm a coach, and I coach a girls' basketball team. And I can tell you that there, you know, we all know what an absolute advantage boys would have playing against girls.
But sir, you have no examples of this happening. Why would you take your time to do this? Let's talk about other things that I can give you examples of in your state. According to U.S. News and World Report, West Virginia ranks 45th in education, 47th in healthcare, 48th on the economy, and 50th in infrastructure. If you cannot name one single example for me of a child doing this, why would you make this a priority? I just named four things that would seem to me like a much bigger priority.
So I just love that Stephanie Ruhle was not here for the bullshit that day and was kind of giving us a bit of activism journalism, which I appreciated. But I just really appreciated the line of questioning and the way that she held his feet to the fire and pointed out how low a priority this should be for the state of West Virginia, who is, if we're trying to protect kids in school and make sure that they have the best opportunities, we should probably make sure that their state is not in the low 40s in education. So I appreciated that.
Well, I'll just go a little step further and say it shouldn't be a priority at all. It shouldn't be high, shouldn't be low. Mind your fucking business. I want to give an honorable mention to myself and my man. Texas Isaiah, FYI, King Texas on all social media, on Instagram. He photographed two of the four covers for Entertainment Weekly's Pride issue, which came out today. And I wrote one of the cover stories on Lena Waithe. And so shout out to us because we be in Black, trans, and fabulous, and you motherfuckers can choke on it.
Wow. Okay.
Taste it. Let it just get stuck in your throat.
Well, never mind. Okay, wow. It's time for us to move into Black History is Happening Every Day. Hit the music.
Black History is Happening Every Day. This week's Black History Month moment, or Black History moment, you know what the hell I mean. I wanted to highlight, you know, this one moment. I've mentioned it on the show before, when the throats, okay, of Marsha Ambrosius, Kelly Price, Jill Scott, and the one and only Ledisi assembled like the Avengers on the stage of Black Girls Rock a few years ago, and they sang a rousing rendition of Nina Simone's Four Women that truly was meant for divine ears only, but they gifted it to all of you common folks with a live performance. Take a listen.
My skin is brown.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I made a reference to this performance on the episode of the show that we just recently did, We Stand Together, and you completely played me like you didn't know what I was talking about. So first of all, fuck you. Second of all,
that's a lie.
Love this
first
clip.
First of all.
Third of all, that's
love
how
you like to rewrite history.
Third of
who's Melania Trump now?
I don't know that works, but I'm going to let you have it. So anyway, but yeah, the episode of this, me and Jared love to, Jared who's been on the show, we love to just answer the phone, my skin is black. And like, it's just a beautiful, beautiful performance.
All right, before we go, if you liked this conversation, we want to encourage you to check out another episode. Actually, the episode that Mykel Street was on the first go around, he was here. Episode number 50, Let's Talk About Sex, Baby. How you doing?
Okay.
So you can scroll back up and get more of Mykel's brilliance if you are interested in that.
Lastly, we want to thank you again for your continued support of the show. We really do appreciate it. And while we are here in the Max Fun Drive, it is a time that we like to just take an additional moment to say thank you for supporting not only Fantai, but the family of shows here at Maximum Fun, and supporting Max Fun as a company. It really means a lot to us. As you know, all of our shows are artist-owned and audience-supported, which means that we are able to create these shows and offer them to you because you all support them. So we want to remind you to go to MaximumFun.org/join for your opportunity to either join the Maximum Fun family and become a part of the Fantai fam financially, or to upgrade your membership to make sure that you can continue to support the show.
And you might be like, listen, I don't got the coins right now. And that's cute, okay? We understand, because listen, we in a whole parallelogram still, okay? Make sure y'all get y'all vaccinations, okay? But if you're not able to financially contribute, that's why we tell you every single week, if you're listening on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Spread the word to your friends and your family. And as always, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, any other week's show, you can tweet at us or Instagram us at Fantai Podcast, or send us an email at fantai@maximumfun.com. Erg, honey.
Want to give a special shout out to the creatives that make this show possible. Our music is done by Corice. You can find him wherever you get your Slayworthy audio. That's Core.ece. Our graphics and video design, all that kind of cool graphic stuff that goes along with the show, comes from Ashley Wynn and Moonhouse Creative. Our producers are, I did this on the BoCo episode, so I'll do it on this one as well. Laura Swisher. That like bursts out of you. And Jordan Kelly. This is a production.
Somebody gonna be mad at me for yelling. Sorry, y'all.
Maximum. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
All of that stuff is available. Available?
Listen, you struggling today. It's okay.
I am.